We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Welcome to the Podcast Maneuver, the officially unofficial podcast for Star Trek Picard on Paramount Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 3, Episode 7, Dominion. Aaron, how did this episode hit you?
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Nice.
I thought it was cool. I liked finally getting kind of to the point of where the Changeling plot is. I thought Amanda Plummer did some good work as Vedic. I still don't know where they're going. I mean, there's so many questions. Like, I don't know where they're going with this Red Vines baloney with Jack Crusher.
Yeah, what is the secret of Jack Crusher? Yeah. Super curious.
I continue to think Brent Spiner's crushing the battle for the positronic body between Lore and Data. I think he said, like, there's a couple of really quick transitions where he goes from Data, like, you know, talking to Picard like Data does, to like Lore rest and control to just fucking roast Picard. I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm digging it. I also like the fact that like it's so weird because this feels like it's coming out of left field for this Star Trek, but like Starfleet officers weighing the morality of something.
Oh yeah, with Picard, you know? And Beverly being like
wow, okay, in the era of evil Federation, we're still good. We still haven't completely just lost all of our principles and our high-minded ideals and stuff. So, like, I feel like it was a little bit of a turn towards classic Trek. It's too bad that now that all the bridge crews together, they're suffering the classic Star Trek The Next Generation problem of you can't feature them all in the same episode. Like, you know, we got more Data and a lot more Geordi in this episode, which means Worf has to take a back seat. Riker has to take a back seat, but you know, like I said, that's been a long, it's hard to keep an ensemble cast like this, especially when you got twice as many people on the Titan and all of Geordi's kids and that stuff running around. But I thought it was a really, really fun and entertaining episode, hung together pretty well. What about you?
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit. I'm noticing this pattern of, the thing they're doing here that is like half working for me and half like getting in the way, which at the end of the episodes when they want to bring you to the big emotional climax, they're like intercutting scenes where action is happening simultaneously, and it's almost working because all of them are kind of coming together as a theme, right? You got characters talking about how much they care about each other and other characters talking about their ideals and things like that, and they all kind of reinforce each other thematically. But man, there are some scenes in here that I really just want to see play out. I want to see Geordi pleading with Data without interruption because it's so good, because LeVar Burton is crushing it and Brent Spiner is crushing it. And I just want to sit in that moment with them for a second. The episode isn't letting me, and it's in service of this bigger thing that they're doing, which is mostly working. So I'm like torn on that strategy, that particular piece of filmmaking there. And they've done this several times throughout the series. It's kind of becoming a hallmark of the show for me.
Yeah, it's funny. Behind the scenes, we ran out of screeners after the end of the sixth episode. And we were kind of worried for a time that we wouldn't get additional screeners. Because sometimes, sometimes we piss people off. I think some of my commentary on Picard is not super measured this season. Sometimes they just don't provide, like, you know, they give you the first five or six to get an opinion, and then the rest they kind of keep for surprise. They don't want it to leak out spoiler. But in the last out, we did get some this week, but I've spent the last couple weeks just kind of like checking out the contemporaneous coverage and what people are saying. And there's been a lot of fun stuff. Like, did you know that there's a statue to Zefram Cochrane on Geordi's desk at his museum?
No, I missed
like
that.
A little miniature where he's like, it's just like in, like he's got his hand outstretched and
of course,
and I
it's
guess
idol,
LeVar
right?
Burton like, kind of came on the set and he was kind of like, you know, comes in, he's got his outfit, his uniform on, he come around, he's looking at us and he saw that Cochran statue and he picked it up and like he hugged one of the production designers and said, you guys get it. Like,
yeah,
you know,
totally.
And that's cool because I honestly, I didn't catch that, but I really like that. And I've never had a problem with the brain trust behind Picard. Like, I do believe that they do love Star Trek. They have a pretty good handle on its lore and whatnot. It's just, I think they love different things about it than I did. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to like update it in a modern way that I don't like necessarily, but it, these people really, if you've ever seen the old, the Next Generation cast in like a big panel on a Star Trek con, or they clearly love each other and have a lot of fun. There wasn't any of that kind of like big outsides personality and like in the Bill Shatner stuff that right. kind of, you know, sandbagged the first few years of the old series. Like they just love working together and cutting up and joking and clowning on each other. And that comes through. That comes through mm-hmm. the season. Like,
oh yeah,
and I really like the behind the scenes stories and interviews that I've seen. So yeah, I this has been, I mean, clearly the best season of Star Trek Picard we've ever gotten. In
oh,
terms
without
of like,
a doubt.
We're going into episode 7. I'm still fully engaged with the plot. You know,
and the most consistently good. It's been, you know, not top to bottom amazing, but
yeah,
much better than the yeah. previous two seasons. I really am curious about this Jack Crusher thing. They've done a good job of teasing that out without making it feel tedious. I think they've come up against the edge of that a couple of times, but they've always managed to give me just enough new information to go, okay, let's see where they take this. And now it looks like we're about to just get the full dump, right?
Yeah.
And Vedic's just going to give it all to us.
That's what they've struggled with. Like, you know, like I have a little bit more faith this season that this Red Vines, Red Eyes, you know, mind control powers of Jack Scott is actually going to go someplace that's interesting and satisfying. Where,
but know, previous, at the same time, I cannot see what it could possibly be. Right?
That's the thing. It could, it actually might fall completely. This might be the opposite of previous, where it's like, you know, they start strong, stay strong, and then get all the way to the end and it just crashes, you know?
Mm hmm. Mm hmm.
There's a transporter accident and the two plot lines get mangled, you know, like sure. in the Star Trek, the motion picture. That's a possibility.
I'm just thinking through all of the mechanisms in Star Trek, like what could give him this ability? And I can't pinpoint one that I've seen that is close enough to this to make me identify. Yeah, that's what is probably going on here. And that's good.
Like Section 31 and them
yeah,
doing all these horrifying experiments. And like, there's something also satisfying about the Federation's hubris and Starfleet's reliance on this kind of skullduggery, black ops stuff that's like bit them in the ass. So it's like, yeah, I can't either, but like, there's something kind of satisfying about this, that Starfleet's kind of done this to themselves. They're hitting themselves, and now the changelings have got them by the short curlies.
Yeah,
by the bulging nacelles.
Sure. No, I like that twist that, you know, Picard thought he had it all figured out, knew what the Dominion War resolution was, felt bad about that because it's a bad resolution, but also thought that the Federation did the right thing in the end when apparently they did not.
Is this a retcon or is this not a retcon? This is just something that.
I don't remember.
That the Federation was not going to give them the cure and going to really genocide them. And then
the changeling stole it. And they took credit for
they
it
credit,
and said we gave
which
it
is
to
smart.
Maybe.
That's
sure,
a smart
yeah.
thing to do.
Yeah, I don't
Odo
know. I, can't
about, I mean, like, how did they keep that covered up for so long? Well, you wouldn't think Odo would stand for that.
Yeah, you wouldn't.
But
I don't know. Once
like
you get
said,
in that lake of goo, I mean,
right.
all bets are off, man.
Yeah, from that perspective, is anything wrong? Is anything, you know?
Well, it's like trying to get me out of bed in the morning. It's like there would have to be like the reports of genocide would not do it. I would need to have something more concrete, more relevant to my individual life.
Your people being genocided, that wouldn't get you out? Because that's what we're talking about here.
It would have to be like they're coming to genocide you. You need to get out of bed. And even then, I'd need a cup of coffee. So
like if the Federation started proton torpedo bombing the other side of the Dominion planet, you just chill. You just chill. It's on the other side of the planet.
When I start feeling the ground shake. Mm-hmm.
When the photon torpedoes hit on this continent, let me know. Until then, I'm going to be in here doing whatever the fuck I do in this pile of goo.
Yep. Anyway, maybe we should get into the recap, yeah?
Yeah, let's do it.
Set phasers to add. We'll be right back.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Captain on the Bridge, welcome back to the podcast maneuver. All right, we started off with the Titan hiding in the Chakotay scrapyard. Oops, I mean the Chintaka scrapyard. Seven contacts Tuvok to see if he can help her old shipmate. She says they can meet at Aklian 7, and Tuvok agrees, which tips her off that he's a changeling because the Vulcan would never go there. Fake Tuvok starts tracing them and then threatens Picard, and apparently they're on their own solving this crisis.
It's good to see Tuvok.
I don't care for Voyager, but it is still nice seeing these old characters come back in what I think some people could rightly claim is the final old school style Star Trek.
Yeah. Am I crazy, or did I just see Tim Russ on Poker Face? I thought I saw him just in, let me check on his IMDb real quick. Yes. Okay. Yes, he was. He was Max in the Orpheus Syndrome. All right. He was really good in a recent episode of Poker Face. I just saw him. That I thought, again, I watched the first three seasons of Voyager because, again, I was a Star Trek nerd and I wanted to give it a shot. And I never quite gelled with the crew. But yeah, I like that. I know a lot of people do like it, and it's cool that they're paying homage to like all the Star Trek at this point. I thought it played this close to parody, you know, like Seven of Nine being like, oh, Tuvok, how many freckles do I have behind my left ear? Well, of course, you have three. Oh, okay. Well, good. I can trust you now. But what was the last hand game we played on Rock the Geno? Well, of course, it would be the Ace of Ferengi. And oh, and then it's like, okay. Just like the music would change, and it would like, and then the one point where, you know, he answered the I don't know, whatever house of cards, they played this triumphant Voyager theme, and it just kept on going back and forth until she finally, no Vulcan would set their foot on Aiklin 7, and you healed my mind. Yeah, it's, I thought that was pretty funny.
And the way they're like zooming in on her, like they're using whatever that method is, where like it brings the actor closer and the background farther away, or the same distance, or whatever.
Yeah.
I forget the name of that method of shooting.
The push, the pull zoom, or something, where you're
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, you're pushing in on the camera, but zooming out, and it makes the foreground or background look like it's fleeing from you.
Yeah, they're doing that while this, you know, music is ramping up, and I'm like, this is a little over the top, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good. I enjoyed, like you said, seeing Tuvok, and I enjoyed the game that they're playing here, right? They can't be sure who to trust. They've got double and triple levels of like subterfuge here. And I think it's smart, and it's pretty well done. So no complaints.
Yeah, I wonder, like, when they're torturing Tuvok, like, what, how do they know, like, where to go down the personal details? Like, tell me all, like, if someone came to me with, like, a torture device and's like, tell me all the details of your friendship with Jim, I'd be like, Jesus Christ, what do you want to know?
Do you have
like,
25 how far, years?
How long do you want me to talk about the fucking Axis and Allies games we used to play? Like, is that going to be useful?
What does juiced mean, huh? In context, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me the tale of the mighty, mighty Orphbot. It's funny. I really liked when, you know, Picard got sick of everything shit and they dropped the subterfuge and he comes onto the bridge. He's like, tell me what Will Riker is. And Tuvok, the Tuvok clone turned into like this horrifying zombie Will Riker.
Yeah.
Super
yeah.
sweet. That I was, like that.
I wonder if that's what Riker really looks like at the moment, or if he's just trying to get Picard's goat.
Maybe.
Because they've apparently done some nasty stuff to Riker. We don't ever get to see it in this episode, but
yeah, I wonder if what they're doing to him. I wonder how him and Deanna are doing. We haven't gotten an update on them since we last saw Riker get. We do know Riker's able to pull one over on him, though, so implies he's not completely compromised, right?
And Vedic says like, we weren't able to get any information out of them. We underestimated their like resilience loyalty.
Like we can't break them in the time that we have left because they're just too loyal to Picard.
Yep. Okay, so they're running out of time before Frontier Day. Beverly starts just immediately planning the re-genocide of the changelings, and Picard condones her research into it. He's like, yeah, we got to do what it takes. Geordi wonders if they're trying to make a copy of Picard, but they need more info.
Yeah, it's funny because Picard, that's the thing. Picard's like, well, let's not cross any lines, but keep the research because I'd rather have the genocide and not need it than need the genocide and not have it. I'm like,
sure.
I don't know. I feel like in my experience of Star Trek, when someone invents the genocide weapon, it just it will be used.
Yeah.
Like no one's going to invent the Genesis device and just be like, not use it. No one's going to invent the Borg phage or whatever, and not going to, like, it's, yeah, you, if you commit, if you give yourself the ability to commit a war crime, you're going to commit a war crime.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it seems like this is going to be no, but I appreciate they had the moral debate. I appreciate that Beverly took the time to be like, this is not ethical to do, and blah, blah,
there's
blah.
Several decisions here that Picard and Beverly are like making together that raised my eyebrows. I think would raise a Vulcan's eyebrow. For sure.
Well, they got the kids involved, man.
Yeah, it's true.
Back to that trolley problem. You'll do anything to save them.
I was surprised to see that they weren't leaving the vicinity after that exchange with Tuvok. Like, yeah, maybe they didn't get a full trace, but...
Right.
Maybe for safety's sake, just go to a different part of open space.
Let me ask you this. They name check this Chintauka scrapyard, which is I guess because I was watching this, I'm like, oh, instead of using a made up battle site. Why didn't they use like Wolf 359 or something? But no, this is this was a famous battle in the Dominion War, I guess. Is this the first one they did where they got the Galaxy class starship blown up? Because I remember that really blew
my hair
back.
Episode. Yeah, the Olympic or whatever it was.
Because you're like, oh man, the fucking Federation's got their war fleet together and they're going to wreck shop, and the Dominion just handles them, and the Jem'Hadar ship's suiciding in on them. Whoo!
In a matter of minutes, they take out a Galaxy-class cruiser. Yeah, that's...
Yeah. Apparently that's not this, because that result is a defeat, and this Battle of Chintaka is a Federation victory. But yeah, it's a famous battle in the Dominion War. It took place... Deep Space Nine episode, The Changing Face of Evil, which was a season 7, towards the finale.
And they say something about like Vulcan ships, maybe scraps of Vulcan ships giving off radiation in this zone,
like,
potentially.
Yeah, like
so
one, yeah.
They must have been involved.
Well, were they talking about Tuvok's ship? I think my thing is that they actually got into a battle and disabled.
But he's not on a Vulcan ship. Are they saying it's a Vulcan ship because he's the captain? Well, he's in Starfleet, right? Like,
yeah, but I think it's canonical that like mostly Federation crews things along racial lines or species lines.
Wow,
like, you have an all Vulcan, which always
never
sat
seen
well
somebody
with me.
In a Starfleet uniform piloting a Vulcan ship, have I?
Piloting a Vulcan ship? No, you wouldn't. You'd see a Vulcan commanding it. But like, the Enterprise is clearly a human ship. 90%+ of its crew is human. But like, I think that's what they do, because like the thing is like, so Vulcans, like, their ships slightly warmer because their body temperatures are higher. And it's just, I don't think it's like a racist thing. Like, they can't stand
can't
it. It's more of like, it's more like instead of having those Mentars have their little vape modules, the dudes that look like catfish.
Convenient excuse. Those Vulcans out there being like, you just can't handle the temperatures, you know, we're not comfortable in your air. What they really are saying is your fucking illogical brains are mucking with our vibe, man.
Yeah, they smell, their food tastes funny, their alcohol's not strong. Yeah,
their ships don't give off enough radiation, apparently.
But that's what. So you're saying, like, I don't think they left. I think they just jumped Tuvok's ship and fucked it up.
Huh. I didn't even think they met with him. That, like, Tuvok was trying to track him down and they didn't track him, right?
Yeah. But I don't know. Maybe there's a whole bunch of Vulcan ships out there in the scrapyard, too.
Yeah, that's what I was figuring.
So they're trying to make it. We talked about this. They're trying to make a doppelganger of Picard. Now, what kind of blew me away is the fact that they need Jack as like the frog for the dinosaur DNA in Jurassic Park. But like, they have, what would you think, 65% of Jean-Luc Picard's corpse?
Yeah. All the DNA you need is contained in the corpse.
Right? It's not fossilized.
No.
You know, maybe
there are hairs on it. Like, you can get the DNA.
Right. I'm not even sure why don't they have his whole body? Because it's not like he died in combat. Like, he got his conscious transferred to a droid.
Of it.
Yeah. And then soon just autopsied and butchered him just cause, you know, sold his legs. And
well, he kept trying to take DNA samples and none of them worked, up to like 35% of his body. they had to scrap most of it for the DNA samples.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. You wouldn't think they would need any of Jack's DNA.
Maybe he's taken so much ionizing radiation over his long career in space that his DNA is just fucked up. No single cell nucleus has an identical copy of DNA in Picard.
So I think there's something in there that covers this. They say later in the episode something about his Irumati syndrome,
The Jumanji syndrome.
It's called?
Sure.
Jumanji syndrome, yeah. Not being actually Irumati. It was a misdiagnosis, and there's something inside of him that they want that is not his DNA.
I have a hot theory on that.
Does it have to do with Nausicaans? Because I'm with you.
No.
I'm with you. Oh,
no.
Okay.
No.
We've got two competing theories then.
Let's have dueling theories when we get to that point in the episode.
That sounds great. My theory is totally half-baked. I can't wait to hear yours. We've also find out the Raffi and Worf are out monitoring Starfleet security somewhere, so that's why they're not in this episode.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, so they they need more info, so they go to see Data, and they wake him up, but Lore keeps butting into the conversation. Geordi speculates that Soong was trying to synthesize their personalities to create a perfect artificial human, but he ended up partitioning the brain out of fear that Lore would override Data and just take over. And Picard asks why the changelings wanted his body, and here's where Data says there's something inside of it other than his DNA that they want. Picard can't stand seeing Data like this and decides we need to shut him down. Actually, no, he wants to erase Lore from Data's brain, and Geordi's like, I don't think we can do that. Let's shut him down.
Yeah. I really like them adding the flickering eye lights to, like, you know, anytime Data in the old series would, like, access information, you know, he'd be like processing or whatever. Like, they've added this kind of like flickering lights, like he's looking at a view screen inside his own eye. I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, they didn't happen, but I that's really super cool. And I already talked about it in the preamble, but I really like how they do this. How Brent Spiner just goes, like, Data will be answering Picard, and then Lore comes in and's like, what are some of the things he said? Oh, that explain why you look so old, which is funny because Lore is old too.
Right.
So it's
right.
Like he's talking shit about, that... yeah, a slightly mm-hmm. older positronic android.
Just hold the mirror up to him.
Right. And
really blows mind.
Yeah, so this is the scene where they talk about there's some anomalous form inside Picard, and the Jumanji syndrome diagnosis is in doubt that it might have never been. So you have a Nausicaan theory on this?
Yeah, what if this is somehow related to his artificial heart? Like, Starfleet put some experiment. I don't know why they would do this with basically an ensign at that point or whatever he was, but like. Yeah, what if they put some kind of tech inside of him that the changelings need?
I'm trying to think, because he has to have regular. He has to have that regularly serviced and recharged and whatnot. So he have to come in on a regular basis to get. I could see that.
Maybe.
Do you want to hear?
Maybe
it's
built in. Yeah,
my crackpot theory.
It's got to be better than that.
All right, hear me out. One of the changelings 20 years ago accepted a super secret, top secret mission.
Oh, no.
To penetrate, and disguise themselves as Jean-Luc Picard's left nut.
Yep.
And Jack Crusher is the changeling hybrid.
Offspring. Mm-hmm.
They shot changeling. The changeling sperm murdered Picard's sperm.
Changeling goo into Beverly? I don't like this.
Shot changeling goo into Beverly and Jack's a changeling baby. Yep. It's a cuckoo situation.
Mm-hmm. A cuckoo situation?
Yeah, you know, the cuckoo lays their nest in another bird's egg, and then or another bird's nest, and then the cuckoo hatches and pushes the other bird's eggs out, and then the other birds are tricked into raising the cuckoo as their own.
Smart.
Beverly got cuckooed.
Got cuckooed.
Well, Picard got cucked, and then Beverly got cuckooed. So just there's lots of cucks and kooks going all over the place.
Oh boy,
got your cucks and your kooks, the kooks and the cucks.
I like my heart Nausicaan idea better.
Oh really? No, I'm team left nut for sure.
All right, I'll be team artificial heart.
Okay,
AKA right nut, because we're both nuts apparently.
Who's the penis between us?
I mean, there's only one other person working at Bald Move. I hate to break it. Let me ask you this. I'm getting strong Westworld vibes from the cognitive function section of this, where Geordi's like, yeah, turn him on. Cognitive functions only. Mm-hmm. He can still move. I don't like that he can still move. Cognitive functions. I don't even like that he can talk. That's
yeah,
not part
they should
of your
have
cognitive
like,
functions.
They got that fiber optic shit plugged in the back of his head. They should just like, yeah, have a readout on a screen or a disembodied voice.
Or say like cognitive and speech functions only or something.
Right,
like
right.
The idea that he can move with only his cognitive functions going on.
Disable gross motor functions or something like that.
Right. Yeah. So he can't move his arms or legs, but can talk and emote.
Yeah, but like that's the thing. It's like, how would you keep a sophisticated superintelligence like that imprisoned in its own body when you actively are making connections? And I buy the lore no matter what is probably a match for Geordi even, especially since this is a more sophisticated, advanced positronic brain model, and it's got the combined memories and experience of Data, Lore, Picard, all the Soons, B4, right? Mm-hmm. What did somebody say that he has Picard in there too for some reason?
Oh, maybe I don't think not. It was Picard, no.
But that's a lot of fucking... That's a lot of experience and knowledge about detailed Starfleet things, and yeah, I bought it. But you're right, it is kind of dumb that, it's like you're either freezing the motor functions or you're not.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking about this Aromatic syndrome stuff again. Are they playing with fire here? Is this a dangerous thing to do? Because part of Picard's canon for me is that he has Aromatic syndrome, and I know that's been taken out of him now that he's some kind of freakish golem thing. Are you gonna be, if this isn't really good, if this isn't really fucking good, that it wasn't Aromatic syndrome all along, are you gonna be disappointed? Because they're fucking with all good things, man. They're playing with some of the best of Star Trek right here, and I am worried. I'm getting more worried as I'm thinking about it more, that they could potentially fuck that all up.
So I always tell myself that ever since J.J. Abrams' time doubt, thing, like this, everything that's happened after the Star Trek movies is an alternate universe, and all good things is, they can't take all good things away from us. Like, if this sucks, we can just be like, well, Picard sucks, and it's an alternate JJ thing, and our world Vulcan is not blowing up, and blah, 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 and we're fine. So, like, yeah, I don't think they can retroactively, like as stupid as Star Wars gets, it's not like Empire Strikes Back is never going to be a banger, right? And I feel like the same way about, like, we got a fantastic finish to Star Trek The Next Generation, and that, they can't take that away from me.
Yeah. All right, that's fair. Let's go on to Vedic. She was not able to get info from Riker or Deanna, and her changeling overlord tells her to find the boy before Frontier Day. Threatens to turn her into goo or something if she doesn't. We have been questioning, like, what is Vedic? Is she a changeling? Is she a human that's working for changelings? She's a straight-up changeling. This scene says it. She's like the new breed of changelings, the evolved ones or whatever that Beverly would call them. But she is absolutely 100% changeling. Glad they put that to rest.
Yeah, like I agree because it's becoming a. I never thought that she wasn't, but some people were getting that impression. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you said like the Red Letter Media guys maybe were thinking hyping that theory.
Yeah, it was like she just had like this traveler.
Which is kind of a neat idea, but also
it would be cool.
Yeah,
like a literal handler. Your handler is a hand.
But I think it's also super cool that you can kind of communicate. So are there two entities inside of her swimming around in the goo that is her, or is the hand thing?
She severs the connection to herself, which allows the other thing to channel into it, is how I interpret it. But like,
and
I
the
mean,
platform
good,
how... that it's sitting on is kind of a connection with
mind. That's like the hyperspace receiver that allows it to interface. Yeah, because she does pour it into like a Harry Potter style pin sieve.
It doesn't seem like she talks to it outside of there.
I barely know. I mean, the changing's biology is completely mysterious. Like, I don't remember Deep Space Nine super well, but I feel like they were super mysterious all the way to the end. You know, they finally understood them well enough to make a biological phage to attack them. But
but that was obviously late on, right?
We're talking about super advanced, developed, artificially engineered changelings. So like, you tell me they can do this, I think it's super cool. And there's no canon that says they can't. So
for sure,
this is good place for Trek to do world building.
All right, Jack invites Sydney back to his quarters sometime. We hear her thoughts, which are for him to, like, take it easy, man. Take it slow. Just touch my hand first. And then she's surprised when he does exactly that. She asks why he did it, and he sees all these visions behind her. What the hell, man?
I don't know. We're back.
He can hear people's thoughts.
Yeah, we're talking about... We're back with this Red Vines situation. I don't know what's going on with it. I thought that he had Jumanji syndrome, and this is like early onset Jumanji, and Beverly had some new, you know, she hit him with the red, she hit him with the blue, and he's going to be kind of cured. But now it seems like there is something happened in the Operation Left Nut that has imbued him with this power, this compulsion. And
all right, new theory.
Okay.
Picard actually had sex with Deanna, which is where he gets his ability to hear people's thoughts. And then the fertilized egg was transplanted into Beverly
by an alien entity against her will. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
And it happened
before.
You know, and it's the changeling Guth scenario. It's all of the same, except there was a middle woman, Deanna Troi.
It is weird because, like, that's the fact that he's psychic is interesting, you know, because canonically we know that certain races are mildly psychic, you know, like the Betazoids are, I guess, heavily psychic. And, you know, the Vulcans have kind of a weak telepathy if they can touch you and all that kind of thing. But, like, yeah, how do you get, you know, how do you get a human to have that ability?
I don't know, man.
And why is it now happening? Like, it seems like it's intensifying his powers and abilities and all that, or, you know, because, like, he's had a lot of these things his whole life, the plaguing of visions and whatnot, but, like, being able to enter someone's thoughts and even control them.
Yeah, like, I mean, this is, like, half as crazy as the shit he gets up to later in the episode.
Yeah, I'm wondering if, like, the presence of Vedic is causing this. You know, she did something to accelerate his development the last time they met.
Could it be a timed thing where, like, this is all a countdown to this Founder's Day, and as we get closer to that, it's affecting him more.
Right. It's like I said, there's a lot, but, like, I have no idea the full shape of the plot.
Me either, and I kind of like it.
Mm-hmm.
Do they do this thing where we hear the internal thoughts of characters very often in Star Trek? I'm trying to think. I can remember, like, maybe a Data's Day might have had that stuff.
Like a narration?
Yeah, where we're hearing Sydney's thoughts.
No, I mean, like, the things I can think of are, like, when Deanna and Loxana are having conversations, because, like, you know, Loxana likes having psychic conversations with Deanna, and...
Yeah.
Sometimes you would get that with other, like, almost every single time I can think of, it's in connection with Deanna, because she's the only like real telepath/empath we've ever had as a primary POV character.
And Data's usually doing it through, like, a series of logs. I mean, it will have that happen, but never.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, it's not near. It's always in the frame of, this is the officer's log about his day or whatever.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That was interesting.
It'd be super funny if Picard's been psyched, though. That wasn't his captain's log. He's just beaming his thoughts directly into the audience's brain.
Mm-hmm. And he just thinks in captain's logs. He wasn't actually recording anything. His thoughts are organized. Stardate 417. Yeah.
Yep. They're his thoughts are organized to official Starfleet reports at all times.
All right. Jack goes to the bridge where they get a compromise code, seemingly from Riker. I'm going to take that with a grain of salt. I'm not certain that's true. We'll see. Jack takes Picard aside and tells him that he feels bad about Riker potentially dying for him. Also, he feels like something's wrong with him. He tries to explain that he can hear in his head, which is a terrible explanation.
Yeah.
Picard suggests, you know what? We might be able to go on the offensive here and get Vedic if we can get an advantage.
So because I never doubted that Will probably had done something to do this compromise code, but you think that...
I don't know, man.
Now that I'm thinking about that speech that Vedic gives, it's like one of those big villain speeches where it's like, you have thought that this is going the one way, it's always been going this other way, and every time you thought you've won, it's because I intended it, and it's all my desire. So, like, yeah, it could be...
I love that water has many paths toward, you know, the ocean or whatever she says there. That's such a great analogy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm now seeing conspiracy everywhere, you know, plans everywhere.
I mean, you should, because, like, open Starfleet's compromised. It's been the plot all season. So anything could happen.
So the Shrike comes in, finds the Titan drifting lifeless in space. There's a recording of the incident that led to it. Vedic has a boarding party sent over to the Titan where she finds Jack immediately. He runs away. Vedic's troops give chase and they run right into a trap. Vedic's caught in a force field. But so are Sydney and Jack. So doesn't go off quite how they hoped.
Yeah. The old trying to trap people in hallway, shield corridors, gambit.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda Plummer, this episode, she said this a couple times this season where she says things that sounds like some kind of quote from a Shakespearean novel. Like here she goes, "Tick tock calls the ancient clock." I can't source any of these things that she's saying. As far as I can tell, they're just wholly original utterances. Like I put quotes around it in a Google search and that sequence of words has never been uttered on the internet. What are they, when she's making these big pronouncements and quotes, is this like ancient changeling wisdom or?
Or just kind of a crazy person thinking too much of themselves and their goals.
This person's been through a lot. You get in this episode. Yeah. They've like, I feel a lot more sympathy towards her and her faction at this point.
Yeah, the same sympathy that I felt toward Odo, frankly, when we get into his backstory in Deep Space Nine. I don't know, but it's more like cuckoo goes the ancient clock because she's off the map, man. She's wild. Geordi tries to transport Jack and Sydney out, but the system's been taken over by Lore.
Got Lord.
Beverly and Picard interrogate Vedic, kind of. I don't know. She says some intriguing stuff about Jack never having been for Beverly. Don't know what that's about. She also educates Picard and Beverly on the true history of Starfleet's role in the Changeling genocide. She tells them about the agonizing experiments that were done on her by the Federation during Project Proteus to turn them into spies, or try to. And she claims that the Federation took her family and now she'll take Picard's.
Yeah, this is a great sequence, like, and it's something that I believe certain segments of Starfleet would do, like Section 31, that they had these 20 changelings after Dominion War, prisoners of war, and that's what they're called, and which entitled them, even by 21st century Earth standards, to certain rights and responsibilities and fiduciary relationship with the Federation and Starfleet, and they fucking violated all that. They did non-consensual medical research and genetic manipulation, torture, just some gross shit. And
sometimes
it seems like
they were just having fun. They had fucking tasers out.
That's not scientific, right?
That's just torture.
It definitely felt like, you know, more along the lines of like Nazi medical research than any kind of like legit thing that had a legitimate point, that they were just being cruel for cruel sake. And these shape shifting creatures that very hard to physically hurt for long. So they're able to just essentially just torment without end these things, like just lock them in this private hell. I thought that stuff, that whole sequence was really. And, you know, because she's been doing all this weird shit with her hands and the fact that she's explaining that this is like a, you know, we never heard the term of symphony, but like I learned about music through the squeaks and the squeals and the screams and the whistling.
Yeah, that's fucked up. I love that.
And then the final reveal that she took the face of her captor and torturer, you know, like whatever the head Nazi doctor was. It's Section 31. It's a pretty sick backstory. I thought it was really well done.
And it plays so well with the manifestation of her personality here, right? This person who is just kind of unhinged. They've been exposed to so much trauma and seen the callous way that the person inflicting upon them was carrying themselves with, like the whistling that she has like integrated that so thoroughly into her personality. She has just this complete fuck it attitude, you know. Nothing matters. This is except for my revenge. That's it. It's the only thing that matters in the world.
Well, and that's like, it goes back to like, you know, like why do we have rules for these types of things? And I think it's because if you don't obey them, you end up with these crazy things happening where you torture a class of people until they just want to bend all of their will and their determination and their intelligence towards destroying you. And then you have a caged monster that you can never let out of its cage. Because if it does, it'll overthrow you. And that's like this is Starfleet reaping what it sows. I honestly, a lot of the Picard seasons have been Starfleet reaping what it sows in terms of its own hubris and its own hypocrisy when it comes to practicing its ideals. And like, if you want to make an argument that's like, hey, we had to do the biological weapon, it was them or us, and the Dominion is belligerent and they're okay. But all that shit that happened with Vedic here, that had no possible, like, they were doing that to make an ultimate weapon. They were torturing these intelligent beings to have like a offensive first strike spy technology. And it's just gross, and it's unbecoming to Starfleet. And I'm glad that this comeuppance is happening. It would be great if Picard, the end of the season, kind of put Starfleet back on the straight and narrow. Like, has them recommit to their ideals, because look at what it's gotten them. Look at what enslaving positronic beings. Look at what torturing changelings. Look at what, you know, trying to commit genocide. Are you safer? Are you safer now than you were? And it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, and I love the way that Vedic makes this personal, too, and points out the hypocrisies even within the high-minded people that we love for those ideals. Like, she brings it down to Jack, right? And displays kind of the difference between the founders, the changelings, whatever, and humans, in that they don't have this link. They can't feel each other's pain. And when she points out, like, do you think she would have kept the secret of Jack from you for 20 years if she could feel your pain? You know, of course not. Of course not. It would be too much to bear. And just like the idea that, like, there is that hypocrisy in people where they're kind of looking out for themselves above all, because it's the only experience they have directly, right?
Right.
Whereas you go to the link and you're like, well, you can feel everybody else's pain, everybody else's joy, and it influences your decision making in that way.
Yeah.
I like all that
stuff. What's so wild, because like, where the Dominion's whole thing is that they were once enslaved, which is why they're trying to enslave everyone else, because like, it's now that you mention it, it's kind of weird that a race like that, where you would think they would evolve towards empathy and understanding and cooperation, was so fucking belligerent and militaristic and totalitarian. But like, I thought maybe part of their backstory was that they were, you know, kind of like the Urquan from Star Control. Like, a lot of what they are is a extreme reaction to being put into a shitty situation themselves. And like, this has never fucking happened. This is like, we're experienced trauma so much that this is never, we will do anything it takes to not be put in this situation again.
It's possible that that's their origin. I don't remember, but yeah, it is a little weird. The like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it just makes their tribe slightly bigger, right? Their tribe is their entire people instead of a faction and of like people. But they're still outsiders.
And like, are these individuals, are they even real people? That'd be like saying like our skin cells are, you know, individuals.
It's like the Borg Queen's view of a human, right? Where it's like they're less than.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah,
which is a dangerous opinion to hold about any being. So Beverly, okay, things get hard to summarize here because we're cutting back and forth, like I mentioned at the beginning. I'm going to take it kind of one path at a time and explore that full path. Hopefully this works. Beverly wants to kill Vedic because she's a threat. Picard asks if they're really so far off their moral path, and Beverly says, yes, definitely we are. Let's kill her.
And John Luke's like gripping up his phaser, and like he looks like he's ready to do it. He's going to kill her.
And we can kind of stop there. We're going to get to all the Geordi stuff here in a second. But like, I'm kind of surprised at Picard's reactions throughout this episode. He comes down on a side that is a little more violent than I would expect from him. It doesn't feel like the Picard way, which is when a threat is neutralized, you don't view it so much as a threat anymore. You take it seriously and you make sure it's contained at all times, like Moriarty, right? Like, take it back to Moriarty. That's someone that Picard refused to kill, and it's a hologram. And so he put it into a self-contained universe. I find it hard to imagine that Picard would even consider here killing Vedic when they have her in a level 3 containment field or whatever.
See, so you're echoing a lot of the problems I had in the earlier seasons where it's like, I don't think that Picard would risk the entire crew of a Starfleet ship to save his son from a situation. It seems like maybe he and like that really bothered me, but I'm like, okay, well, I guess Picard is rolling this way because he's just, those father feelings are really strong and he is willing to sacrifice everything. So like him sacrificing his high-minded ideals, and you know, like the way Vedic, this speech makes her seem like she's irredeemable. Like there's nothing like it. She is the monster that if you let go, she's going to gore and tear and rip. And there's nothing you can do other than you can't keep her in a prison because she's a shapeshifter. You can't humanely keep her. Like she gotta be destroyed.
That early stuff feels very much like the First Contact Picard, right? Where he is pushed to his absolute breaking point and he's ready to abandon everything he believes in order to get revenge.
Because remember when they got Hugh and they were thinking about, he wanted to do research on him to come up with a biological cure, the plague that will kill the Borg. And Beverly kind of like talked him off of that ledge and he recognized the individuality of Hugh and how, but like, you know, that was just his Borg trauma speaking, right?
Totally.
So like every once in a while he can get emotionally compromised and do stupid shit.
Yeah, same with First Contact. It's all that Borg. When something is this personal to him, he does kind of lose his way. And I think that's fine. Here, he looks like he was ready to lose it all the way. And if Vedic hadn't had the ace up her sleeve, it wasn't even the ace up her sleeve, it was just like dumb luck kind of that got her here. If Vedic had been still contained when they got to her, Picard would have killed her. I think that's where it was headed, right?
Sure.
I didn't hear anybody talking him off that ledge, but I don't know. Maybe, you know, circumstance can sometimes be coincidence would be the thing that talks you off the ledge.
Shields up. Here comes the ads. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
It's the 40th anniversary of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom this week. And while the movie might be old enough to belong in a museum, our podcast is brand new. So join us for a conversation on the third or fourth best Indiana Jones movie, depending on who you ask, this Wednesday.
And if retro adventure movies aren't your thing, well, maybe you'll enjoy a time warp in the form of a prequel with the theatrical release of Furiosa. Flashback with us to a time when Charlize Theron looked like Anna Taylor-Joy. And strap in for another epic George Miller action movie this Thursday on Bald Move Pulp.
And finally, we're wrapping up our 4-week coverage of the 1980 TV miniseries Shogun. Get the final verdict on Yabu, JB, Mariko, and the rest of the gang this Thursday on Bald Move Prestige.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. Madman and father of Mad Max, George Miller, is back with another apocalyptic tale from the Australian wastelands.
This time, we're getting a prequel featuring the origin story of Charlize Theron's character, Furiosa.
starring the Queen's Gambit's Anya Taylor-Joy in the title role, and the mighty Thor Chris Hemsworth as the warlord Dr. Dementis. Furiosa promises more high-octane, slightly radioactive action and fun.
Furiosa drives into theaters on May 24th, and we'll have our spoiler-free thoughts and impressions of the film, as well as a discussion of trailers and upcoming movies for everyone. But if you want to ride with us the full length of the podcast on the eternal highways of Valhalla, shiny and chrome, you're going to have to be a club member.
Join today at support.baldmove.com. Get our full discussion of Furiosa and many more first-run films, plus tons of other bonus podcasts and ad-free feeds.
Support.baldmove.com. At ease, Ensigns. Welcome back to the podcast maneuver.
Anyway, let's go over to Geordi. He can't get the systems working, and Jack and Sydney are being threatened. And he pleads with Data to help them, but Lore takes over Data's body and the entire ship, actually, drops the force fields, allowing Vedic to escape into the ship's innards as a shapeshifter. Jack puppets Sydney's body like he's playing a VR game and kicks her attacker's ass. Sydney is appropriately weirded out by that. Geordi pleads some more with Data and gets him to reemerge and turn the systems back over to them. And we'll kind of stop there for a second.
Yeah, you mentioned the Geordi Data being scenes being incredible. What?
Yeah.
You want to talk more about that now that we're here?
I mean, I don't often get to see this gear from Geordi LaForge,
right?
Where he gets this emotional. I don't know that I've ever seen it. And it was impressive. I think LaVar did a great job in playing against Brent Spiner, who is clearly like playing up that conflict within himself.
Yeah.
It was so subtly, though. It's not, it's like, it's just under the surface. It's perfect.
Yeah. No, I've always like, I've talked about this on podcasts before. I don't know why. I always have a fascination for stories about like robots having relationships with people. And I was always, of course, fascinated by Data and Geordi's like friendship, because clearly it's a great friendship, because clearly sometimes Data does things that hurt Geordi because Data just doesn't get it. And, you know, he can be oblivious and he's a challenge. But like also Data's got a lot of great qualities to him. And I thought their friendship was really beautiful. And we've never really got to see here. Like that. That's like, it's funny because I think I saw this mentioned otherwise that like, Star Trek has tried to retcon it into like Picard and Data are best friends. Like best friends. But that's always been bullshit to me. It's always been Geordi and Data are the best buds. Period.
Right. They're friends. So like, I think Picard has respect for him as like a life form.
I think at this point they're like, they'd be friends. Yeah. Like but like there's definitely, you know, Geordi's got that prime position and we've never really seen him process the loss of Data. Like we've gotten tons of time, you know, like a lot of season one was Picard processing that, the denouement of
Nemesis,
the really shitty one, Nemesis, was involved that, but we haven't really seen, and it wasn't very long. I kind of wish we could have more of like Geordi doing this, but it's a crisis situation and he did a great job. And also, like, as much as I love the banana clip, it was such a handicap to poor Burton trying to emote, and like being able to see his eyes and the pain and him pleading, and then like Lore coming back and like mocking him with it. It's a great scene.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was yelling at the screen, stop interrupting the scene. LaVar and Spiner are doing their thing. Just let them do it. You know,
yeah, it's really cut frenetically.
But it works if you can get out of that mode of just like, I want to see these two actors work off of each other for more than 12 seconds at a time. It works thematically. I think it's all very good.
Could Crusher and Picard killed Vedic if they wanted to? Like, it seems like they both like riddled her with holes, presumably kill shots. And like Jack is able to kill. Does she have extra special changeling protection?
I don't know, man. I think they're playing fast and loose with those rules. It's the rule of what do we need to happen here to make it exciting? Fuck it, let's go with it.
Because, yeah, Vedic just goes to goo mode, and or maybe it's like when they're in goo mode, they're a lot harder to kill. Because I noticed that all the ones Jack kills, they're in their solid form.
Yeah, I think one goo gets vaporized totally, right?
Does it? Have we said it had some goo vaporization?
I think so.
So maybe she just got a little bit extra since she's the leader.
Yeah, I don't know. It's fine. Whatever. The thing that we really need to talk about is this VR.
She makes sure her hand takes all the hits.
Yeah. Her communicator
her fucking
is dead.
Boss. Yeah. It's always riding his ass or her ass, like making sure he's taking all the shots.
Uh-huh. So what do you make of Jack Pacific rimming? I shouldn't say it like that. Pacific raccoon, rimming.
No, he's raccooning her. That's what he's doing.
Raccooning, Pacific
remote
rimming.
Raccooning, ratatouing. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know what to make of it. It seems like it's deeply disturbing. Like it's not
as it should be.
Right, but like the Sidney Stiletz, it's not like he, because we've seen people be possessed by other people before, and it's like, you know, you wake up like, oh my God, what's happened to me? And you don't, but like, seems like Sydney's clearly, Crash is aware of what's going on at all times.
She is, yeah.
But I don't know, it's a cool scene. They do like this mirror match, and, you know, Jack 2v1s, V1 this guy, and yeah, I don't know what to make of it. I don't know what to make of this weird Jumanji spinoff he's got.
I don't think people can see his eyes glowing when they glow. Every time somebody looks at him and he's like seeing visions, they don't remark like, hey, your eyes are fucking red, dude.
Right. They say, why are you looking at me drops. That way? But they're not like, why are your eyes red like, you know, you're possessed by an evil demon.
Right.
In a James Wan film.
So I don't know. I mean, clearly it's not all in his head, right? It wasn't a coincidence that he touched her hand. He can actually like take control of people. I cannot imagine where they're going with this, but yeah. I'm kind of excited to see it.
I don't know. Left nut theory. I'm pulling for it.
And then we get to the final like sequence here where Beverly looks up Project Proteus, comes up with a way to track Fedic through some is it
she isolated
some isotope
a compound
that's in there
that, yeah that there's a compound used in their experimentation and research that she theorizes all of the hybrid changelings should have, which makes them
right
uniquely susceptible to a scan.
Are they trying to claim that there are only like 9 of them or 10 of them? Because doesn't Medic say like it was me and 9 of my, was it 19 of my other colleagues?
I think I actually wrote down the
thing?
Exact quote. Let me see if I can find this.
How do you take over all of Starfleet with
you're
10
right
people?
She said nine of my brothers and sisters were kept on shelves and so yeah there's
so
I
Tuvok
think
is one, she's one,
all the bridge
they've
crew.
Killed well maybe they haven't killed the evolved ones, right? I guess
see,
maybe
I
Tuvok
thought,
isn't
though,
evolved,
anytime
he's
I see,
just a changeling.
Anytime I see a changeling changing with the meat effects, I think it's got to be one of them. And I can't remember if Tuvok did or not.
I don't remember either.
Because, yeah, like so I think they have some of the changelings have like support, you know, like they're supported by some regular changelings, some unevolved, unmodified changelings. But, yeah, they only have 9 and there's been a few die, but I don't know. I also have a hot theory about why her crew is wearing these elaborate masks. I think that every one of her crew of the Shrike is the bridge crew of the Enterprise. The big one is going to be Worf or perhaps Riker. Every one of her crew that's you know, like, covered up, because like they're all changelings. Why would they be wearing head to toe clothes with masks? It's got to be to preserve a surprise for us, the audience.
Huh. So, I guess like, I was operating under the idea that they're not changelings. They're just working with the changelings. There's some other alien species.
I don't know. The way she talks to them is like they are her brother. I bet you that's a solid theory too. If they're not changelings. But I'm guessing that they're all
the demon
they're all
face,
these perfect clones of people.
When the demon face talks to, you know, the changeling hand
her,
demon
her handler
thing,
her hand
yeah,
handler.
Her handler talks to her. They're speaking in another language, right? They're speaking in the changeling.
I imagine.
Language. I can't remember if there are subtitles.
There's a subtitle.
In that or not.
I can't either. Yeah.
Crap. You'd think I would know that by now. But yeah, if that's the case, then I suppose they could be, because there are definitely subtitles on all these highly masked up, covered crew members.
That's my official prediction. I think all these people are covered up head to toe, or some, and I think it's going to be the, and it's going to be, there's something about the Picard's crew that's going to be recognized on Frontier Day. And they're going to do, I don't know. But again, then what? Then what? Like,
yeah,
Picard's a retired admiral. Can he just waltz around and, like, you know, destroy the Federation?
Right.
I mean, Captain Shaw, like the captain of a second-rate Starfleet vessel, wouldn't even give him a free ride to anywhere. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't know. I still
think Admiral Janeway is going to listen to him. Get out of here.
Shit.
Janeway's been through too much shit to listen to some old fogey.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably super old by now anyway. Let's get to the end of this. Vedic makes it to the bridge and takes control of the ship. She announces to everyone on board that it was always going to end this way and that it's time for Jack to learn who he truly is.
I like the line of what is formidable against the formless. I don't know that the etymology tracks out, but that's a sick ass line.
I wrote
really
that one down
too.
Yeah, it's a good one. The thing that's hilarious to me is, like, the clock is ticking here. She makes a point of saying, like, how much it's ticking. And then she's giving all these sanctimonious speeches, wasting time before Founders Day.
But it's like, she's really...
Or Frontier Day.
Yeah, like, the fact... Like, this goes back to, like, what, the first episode where she's like, you guys should surrender. Like, this is, nothing is going to change. You're just going to get more pain and more suffering. And, like... Here on episode 7, when you think that they've kind of handled and gotten away, and then her back and be like, oh, this is part of our grand plan. There's many ways to, for the water to get the... I don't know. I do like a villain gloat every once in a while, because she's got them.
Totally.
Like, she's like taken over their ship. She's their captain. She's a... It's at this point, this is the end of Empire Strikes Back of this season. Like, it looks like Picard's... They're just fucked. She's going to reveal the grand plan of Jack, this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. So here's the thing I love about this is she's giving this sanctimonious speech, and she's talking about how it's inevitable and you guys should just have given up in the first place and saved yourself some pain. The problem here, and what really reveals the flaw in that thinking, is Riker and Deanna. Because when she goes to talk to her handler, she is profoundly disappointed in her failure. She's failed in her eyes to get Riker and Deanna to talk. And it's that unity that they don't think that humans have. It's that loyalty to each other. The thing they think humans are incapable of, because they're not part of one. They can't link. They can't do this joining of minds thing that is going to surprise them. Right.
Sure.
That's what I love about this ending, is she thinks she has figured out humanity. She absolutely knows nothing about it.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the end of the episode, man. Get what, three?
I think
left?
Am I got deja vu, or is this like the second time you've made that observation? Because I remember thinking, being impressed by the fact that she is like because they've hinted about like how she came from the Federation, and we wondered what that meant. And now we know that she's literally a creation bent into this shape by the Federation, and that she's got this, like, because of that, she thinks she knows everything about humanity. Well, maybe, fair enough, but you know everything about humanity as Section 31 sees it.
Right.
Which is like saying, like, if you got into some black cell of the CIA, like, you understand everything about humanity. No, you understand a particularly dark part of us, but you don't, you can't see the other parts. And I kind of like that, the fact that her own hubris and revenge makes her essentialize the human race to our worst aspects. Just like we are tempted to do that with the Dominion, you know?
Totally.
If it weren't for Dominion, like, would we feel sympathy for them at all if it weren't for Odo, that we didn't get to know, like, hey, there is an example of someone who's not a complete shit. I don't know. I think that's, again, this is all good Star Trek. These lines of argument and plot are exactly what I want out of Star Trek, and I'm glad we're getting it.
Me too.
All right, that's going to do it for another week here with us at Picard. I keep on trying to find a place to get feedback into because we're getting a lot of feedback, but we keep on being really overscheduled because I don't know if you've noticed, we've been doing like 4 shows a week. We just had The Last of Us roll off, but we got Yellow Jackets coming on. I am getting it all. I'm reading it all. I hope to get a time to do a special Picard episode feedback thing. But in the meantime, if you can like to continue to send us hailing frequencies, picard@baldmove.com is how you do it. And yeah, we'll see you back next week for episode 8. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.